in a world of mindless movie cliches. One podcast fights back. Critics are calling it profound, epic, free. Prepare to revisit your video cassette memories of the 1980s and 90s. Behold, it's VHS Rewind.
You don't make up for your sins in the church. You do it in the streets. You do it at home. The rest is bullshit and you know it.
Unfortunately, it's such a great song.
Yeah, it is.
I want to welcome David Anderson to the show. How are you, David?
I'm well.
My name is Mark Giacoma. I'm the other host. And we are reviewing a modern classic, Mean Streets from 1973. What year were you born, David?
I was born in 1971.
Oh, okay. I thought you were the same exact age as me, but you're not.
No, I actually late 71. I always feel like for the purposes of math, it's easier just to think like I was born January 1st, 1972, because I was born in December of 1971.
Gotcha.
So it's just easier to think it that way.
So I was born in 73, yeah. In February. So most things that existed in 1973 mean a lot to me. I don't know why. Like if I see an album came out in 73 or anything, really, and TV shows and all this kind of stuff. I don't know if you feel that way with your own birth year, where you just feel like...
A connection with the things
it's as old as me, you know?
I'm trying to think, is there anything 71 that I can
Well, my Volkswagen Beetle is a 71.
Okay. Well, see, I'm more sort of connected with... like an earlier Beetle, just because my dad had one that was like, I think like a 68, 67, like,
so '67 was the last classic, in a collector standpoint.
It's got that bumper. It's got kind of a,
yeah. It was the first year of the 12 volt. Like, I'm such a nerd with this, but my favorite Beetle, not that you asked, was a 1966 beautiful, beautiful green, bluish green bug that whole thing was converted and restored. Beautiful car. Should never have sold it. But I did, and it's gone. And now I'm doing another restoration. But speaking of Beetles, if you watch this movie, they're everywhere in this movie. There are vans, Beetles, Squarebacks, Carmenghias. Volkswagen is everywhere in this movie, just like it was in New York City in the 70s.
Are everywhere, really. They were everywhere at the time.
Yeah, I mean, you watch Chips. I don't know if you do. <It's>, and that's, you know, Southern California. And, you know, they're dune buggies, everything. You know, they're wonderful.
They were. I think they were basically the most popular car.
Yeah, totally ever. Ubiquitous.
Yeah, they were everywhere.
Yeah, completely.
And they were built like tanks. And mm-hmm. you could beat them to death, and they still work. They could run on, like, lighter fluid almost, you know.
Yeah, they got amazing mileage. I love my Beatles, and people who listen to the show probably have heard me talk about them just a little too much. So what do we have here? We have Harvey Keitel.
Yeah.
We have a jam-packed cast. We have Robert De Niro. Harvey Keitel.
Yeah, would we say that this is De Niro's... I mean, it's not. I don't think it's his first role, but it's probably his first sort of breakout role, I would think.
You know, I'm not 100% sure about that. I'm looking it up really fast.
Godfather 2 was a year after this.
Yes, which I kind of got confused with you. But yeah, I mean, Bang the Drum Slowly came out around the same time, but it was not as big of a hit as this. It's certainly not as well regarded. Yeah, maybe, you know, there's a lot of these older movies, like Greetings, which, really kind of art housey, you know, you can't really find them. As a matter of fact, Mean Streets and Greetings were the number one reason that back in the 90s, I decided to get satellite TV, which was so fancy.
Are you talking DirecTV or are you talking
no
full big dish? Because brothers on
not that.
That
either. I would love to have a big dish.
I did.
Oh,
I had
really?
I had a bit. I'll have to send you pictures, but
let
I
me
had,
just change the channel.
Yes. Most of the like good ones were like in a chunk of the sky, so wow. It wasn't that bad. But yeah, I had a big dish, 10-foot dish bolted to the house, and I got it in like 1996.
Wow, that's like late. The for end. One. That's awesome, though. I mean,
it was, but in a way, it was almost kept me non-social just because I had all those channels and.
Jeez.
Kept me in my room with my satellite dish and my channels and everything.
One of these days I have to share my satellite hacking that I did throughout the early 2000s.
Wow.
Yeah, did big time. A lot of good stuff, but it's gone now. So everything went digital.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to remember the name of the satellite company because they went out of business. But they were one of the first small dish guys. And we're talking like 96, maybe 95 even.
Okay, I know the names of the companies that were available. There was Dish Network, which is still around.
No.
It was called DSS.
No.
But it ended up becoming DirecTV. There was Alpha Star.
No, it was
which was similar. Star. It was very similar to it was kind of like it functioned very much like a Dish Network thing.
I wonder if West Coast and East Coast had different satellite providers.
There's PrimeStar.
That was it.
And it was like a satellite thing that was oddly connected to cable companies at the same time. It was like cable companies were running a satellite company.
Yeah.
And the dish was
weird looking. The dish was
Yeah, it was like this
oval.
Weird sort of oval and was kind of like 36-inch dish. And they ended up selling themselves to DirecTV at some point. Like DirecTV bought them and sort of folded it into that.
You know, Cablevision at the time was abysmal. It was terrible. Still, well, it's all right.
Yeah.
It's just like every other cable company.
Yeah.
But back then, you know, we didn't get this brand new independent film channel. And as somebody who had spent some time in film school and I was completely geeking out with independent film, I needed to have IFC.
That was part of why I got the dish was, I mean, I happened to be cleaning and I found like a listing of all of our cable channels, like in 1985, six.
Right.
There was literally only like 36 channels.
Yeah. That's crazy. Right.
And we live in this world of like so many and internet and everything. It's ridiculous. It's people don't remember like you were lucky. And before that, I can remember we maybe only had like 20. This was like the expanded. It was like, woo, we have so many channels. And before that we had like 20 some.
Well, you know, the original VHS Rewind logo or whatever was the original cable box with the wire, with the wood grain, with the push buttons.
Yeah.
You know, the bar that goes across. And actually, I was at a garage sale and I bought one that was still in plastic, in perfect condition. I mean, there's nothing I can really do with it.
Yeah.
But it is so cool, man.
I remember as far as cable boxes, we had
doorstop. Are you kidding me? I'm an archivist.
We had kind of like the sliding one like you were talking about, and that was for basic cable. And because this was before people had like knobs, so they only had like 1 through 13. They couldn't even do basic stuff. And then
we had HBO on there, you know, Channel 6.
Well, maybe it was different for you, but for us, when you had like HBO Showtime, a premium service, you had this black, it was like black, and it had like a knob. And it was like a round knob in the middle, and you could have and that thing only went up to 30 some channels, but we only at the time would maybe go up to into the 20s. And then as soon as you got into the 20s, you'd be in all sort of public access local stuff that wasn't even. So it's like actual cable channels. You maybe had like 20, 22, and like the premium services would be at the end, but that was all you would have. And you know, and this is the sort of movie, to kind of get back to the movie, this is the sort of movie that you would watch on those channels at that time, because, you know, it would be like stuff from the 70s a lot.
But I remember the day we got satellite, and it was, I think it was pretty expensive. I had a roommate at the time, and we have this huge stupid box, you know, like in our bedrooms, and I click it on, and I probably had a 32-inch TV, and I was like, oh my God, look at this picture.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, what was it, 480? No, it wasn't 480, but probably like, it was probably pretty good.
But yeah, if you were getting it off the PrimeStar, it probably looked pretty good. I mean, they for a while they were an analog system, and then they were actually a digital system for a while. So I don't know which one you got. You probably maybe when did you get yours?
In 95 or 96.
So yeah, it was probably just starting with their digital system. So at least you wouldn't have like a snowy picture. You might have like kind of an interesting sort of pixely digital kind of a picture, but you wouldn't have had any sort of analog noise, snow, or anything.
So. I remember the first night I had this, I'm like, I'm going to watch it all night, you know, that type of thing.
Yeah.
So I remember Greetings came on, and Greetings was such a big deal to me because I couldn't find this on VHS. I couldn't find this anywhere. I was a big De Niro fan back then.
What channel was this on?
IFC.
This okay.
Is, you know, this is back in the day when IFC actually played independent film. It's like this, MTV, you know. Like,
or AMC, you know, AMC used to show.
No, it wasn't AMC.
Well, I know it wasn't AMC, but I'm saying that like AMC, AMC stands for American Movie Classics. Yeah. They actually showed old movies up until, I don't know, I want to say like the mid 90s. And then they started becoming more mainstream. And
what upset us was Turner Classics came to Cablevision, but with the satellite company didn't get Turner Classics. So now it's like, oh man, come on, make up your mind.
Yeah.
So we just kind of, you know, flip-flopped after, satellite company went under and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, I definitely got to see a lot of movies that I'm either couldn't afford to go purchase because, like, you know, we remember the prices of some of these things back in the 90s. They were very difficult to come by. If you wanted the Laserdisc, I remember I spent $70 on my Taxi Driver Laserdisc.
Criterion. Like Criterion and, as you know, like Criterion, a lot of them were not pressed like at the good Pioneer plant or in Japan. They'd be pressed at like 3M or Technodisc or something. So like now they're all like, they can't even play.
Believe it or not, I have very few disc rotted discs.
Mm-hmm. We got lucky on that one.
I don't know whether it's because I stored them with all my vinyl or.
Well, what? I mean, I've recently gotten back into collecting laser discs, and a couple of discs that I've gotten, not all the discs from 3M, but a couple of my two completely unplayable discs that are just snow, they're both from the 3M plant. So, and I know that Criterion
It's 3M. A shame because it's like if anybody should have known better, it would be Criterion.
Yeah, you just couldn't know. Sometimes they'd be like, I have some discs that were immaculate when I bought them, and now they're either snowy or most of them are from the Sony plant, but that's a whole other show and a conversation. Seriously. But yeah.
But you know, it's interesting because I wanted to see Mean Streets in HD and I could. So
it was on Cinemax in HD. That's how I watched it.
Oh, really? I don't have Cinemax, but I'm just kind of curious if it's on Blu-ray because, you know, I might just order that. So I went actually to my library because my library for thankfully an amazing reason has probably the greatest collection of Blu-rays and box sets of things. Like they really, really
go to the big New York Public Library or
no, our local library. But you know, they have Xbox One, Wii U, PS4. You know, our taxes are high, but I mean, the money gets spent and things like that, and it's wonderful. I mean, my kid goes and picks out like 3 PS4 games. I don't have to shell out $70 a pop for it. You know? Yeah. And if he loves it, I buy it, you know?
Yeah. And you get to keep them for what, like 2 weeks, a month?
A week for games and DVDs. But, you know, it's, you know, you can walk there in 10 minutes.
It's free.
But yeah, I mean, we're very fortunate for that. But so back to the movie. Yes. This opening scene reminded me so much of Taxi Driver. just now. I didn't really notice how much it reminded me of Taxi Driver until just now.
But it's almost like the flip side of Taxi Driver of this guy. He's actually conflicted. He's not like, he's not such a I hate the world character as in Taxi Driver. He's like, he's saying, you know, you make your own luck, you know, you make, you try.
Yeah. I agree. And Keitel, is phenomenal in this role, as he is with in many of the roles. I feel as though Keitel, with the exception of Pulp Fiction, and I know he did okay in Pulp Fiction, is one of the few actors from this kind of genre that really didn't fully sell out. And I, you know what? If I could sell out, you know, like if Sony came up to me and it's like, hey, man, we're going to give you 10 grand an episode for VHS Rewind, keep doing it. Oh, I would sell out.
Oh,
I'd sell out in a heartbeat.
I would sell out with you. I would, I'd sell out for half that.
I wouldn't even return your calls. No, I'm kidding. I'm just kidding. No, but no, it's if I could sell something out, I would sell out. So, I mean, take it with a grain of salt when I say, you know, well, blah, blah, blah. It's just Robert De Niro kind of rubbed me the wrong way with a lot of his comedy. But that's okay. You know, we all have to pay major, major bills. And these people have done, Scorsese included, have done so much for the film community, the Museum of the Moving Image, and just amazing things, you know. So, Mean Streets. Mean Streets is basically a very simple story about a slight, I'm going to say, what is this, a week? Right? Less than a week.
Probably, yeah.
Of friends, I'm going to say. You have Robert De Niro, who plays Johnny Boy, who's the crazy guy. You have Harvey Keitel, who's probably the leader of the bunch, sort of. He's a little bit more mature, but as you've even said, it's a stretch even, because the guy is he's just as unhinged, but maybe just a little bit more hinged. Just yeah, a little bit.
He's conflicted. It's like he's trying to be a good person, but his situation is not allowing him to be. And just the way he's been brought up and the way he's lived of like bad examples and everything, it's just right. Sometimes you just can't get it off you, you know?
David Provol, who we saw pop up in the airplane of what movie?
The Monster Squad.
Monster Squad. I mean, the Monster Squad, Six Degrees of Separation.
Yeah.
David Provol went from starring as Tony
And maybe I'm misremembering the actor. Maybe I can look it up while we're talking, but I could swear he was in Sopranos, too.
Yeah, he was. He was.
And he played the boyfriend of Tony's sister.
He had a big role.
And that this was like, you know, when he was on Sopranos, that was like in about like 99, 2000. You do that math of like that's 26 years after this. No, wait, 79. Yeah. He looks exactly the same.
Yeah, he really does.
The man does not. He kind of got to a certain sort of scraggly, like weird look and just kept it.
Maybe he's got that olive oil skin.
He colored his hair. He probably just kept coloring his hair and he just looked the same.
Yeah, he and a lot of these guys actually aged relatively well.
Yes.
Harvey Keitel, he's always been wrinkly, you know?
Yeah. he's like probably what? It couldn't be more than 30 in this.
You know, I'm not 100% sure, but I know De Niro is 30 in this.
Yeah.
I'm going to say Keitel's a little bit older, but I'm not 100% sure about that. Speaking of Tony, I'm going to play the scene where we get introduced to Tony. He walks, Tony owns a bar or runs a bar. And what do you think, how many people have been in this bar, throughout this movie? What's the quantity, largest amount of people who've been patrons?
Are we talking like
in the bar at all? Period.
In the bar through
at one given time.
Well, let's see.
Six, not seven.
Not many. Basically, just the boys on the block, just like the neighborhood. Like they come in, they get drinks. Something happens.
Nobody pays. Actually, now that I think about it, there is a scene where there are a lot of people in the bar, and that's when Johnny Boy, comes into the bar with the two girls.
Yeah,
it is pretty
like
busy.
It's almost like a jumping joint kind of night of like,
yeah, it's like a Saturday night or Friday night. But here's Tony kind of letting us know what he thinks about this guy shooting heroin in the bathroom.
Keep out of my place. I know your place. And you, scumbag!
Meg, I told you about passing that shit in my place.
Do nothing.
George, what do you do here? You're supposed to be the bouncer.
I didn't do nothing.
That's it. You didn't do nothing.
Pulls his pants up. And it just, in very,
like, I can't believe these guys. I can't believe this happens all the time. I can't believe I'm stuck here.
In the serif font, it's just Tony.
Yeah.
It's wonderful. The next person we get to meet is...
Michael?
Michael, who I have to say is... I don't know. I think that Michael deserved a little bit more respect.
He did. He kept loaning people money and not getting paid. I like the stuff that happens later in the movie. I wouldn't necessarily do what he does, but I kind of agree with Michael on why.
You might be turning a new way of being.
But it's like, I understand why he's pissed off all the time.
Well, you know, here's the thing. You borrow money.
Yeah.
You know, this is something that, unfortunately, I know a little bit about. And not because I borrowed money, but I've heard that if you borrow money from these people, they will give you the money on the spot. You need $5,000, $10,000, $20,000, whatever it is. But you're going to have to give them a lot of money back. And then very often it's 100% interest. So yeah. You borrow $10,000, you better cough up that $20,000. When they say it is, because that $20,000 is going to turn to $30,000 and then $40,000, and then they're going to break your legs. You know, it's just the way it is. And it's real simple. You borrow money, you pay it back. That's it. That's the philosophy.
I just realized it's kind of sound financially for them because they realize, okay, the chances of them screwing us over are mitigated by the fact that they don't want to die.
Exactly.
And so we're going to actually make a profit.
Right.
So that's why we act this way, because we know a few might die, but the money evens out that we make way more.
And you know what? Michael is a necessary evil. He's there for when they can't pay their rent and they can't go to and borrow $200 or $500 from the bank. They have no credit. They have no real job. So he provides a service. And that's what it's all about, is helping each other out. It's just a matter of when you don't pay back that loan, you get screwed. Michael is a very good loan shark, I think. But he is not exactly a good business person, which is what we're going to learn in this clip.
Yes.
Let me just say, he's in the docks.
He's at the docks. You see the bridge.
Yeah.
There's a couple of trucks next to each other.
Yeah, He's basically a loading dock. You see the Manhattan skylight behind him.
And he's basically supervising some sort of unloading and reloading onto different trucks.
Exactly.
For something that they hope they can sell, whatever it is.
And he's thinking probably he's going to make a crap load of cash, and we're going to find out what it is that he bought.
More shit.
Oh, that ain't shit. That's a German lens. That's got two shipments of those. That's good stuff.
Can't use it.
What do you mean you can't use it? That's a telescopic one. That's the best one I make.
It's not German. It's Jap. This is an adapter. It's not a lens. You bought two shipments of Jap adapters, not lenses.
He just closes his eyes and he goes, ugh, again.
Jap-a-dap-a.
And that is our first racial slur of the film.
Right. It'd be a great name for a band.
Jap-a-dapters.
Yeah.
Or a punk song.
They gave me Jap-a-dapters.
Yeah, exactly. So the next scene is we're going to meet up with Johnny Boy, who's walking down the street. And why don't you tell the story about what he does? I think it's one of the funniest scenes. It lets you know exactly the kind of guy Johnny Boy is.
He's walking down the streets of New York, which is actually L.A.
Yeah, that particular
it's
scene
one
is
chunk
LA.
Of the movie. It's like a small part. But he's walking down, and first he he puts something in a mailbox and walks away. And when I watch it, I thought, because he walks kind of towards the camera and he keeps kind of looking back. Mm-hmm. And I realized, is he like super OCD about his mail? Why is he doing that? And then after about three look backs, the mailbox blows up. Like,
but not just blows up, explodes. Like for real blows up. Like, it doesn't just like show some smoke bomb.
I felt like De Niro actually had a real pipe bomb or M80.
Right, they detonated something.
And threw it in. I'm pretty sure they didn't, but it felt very authentic of it. Just went,
yeah, I mean, more than likely that was a prop mailbox, and they detonated it. It was like the last episode of Little House on the Prairie right there, where they blew up all the town.
I haven't gotten to that yet.
Oh, you haven't? I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I already knew that happened.
It's like a 35-year-old spoiler alert.
Yeah, for something that I already saw, yeah.
So, Johnny Boy, you could see he's a derelict. He's always looking for trouble. He's always getting into trouble. He's always looking for the good time. He's always bullshitting people.
And they never really clarify if he blew it up just for fun or if he blew it up for like somebody slipping right. money to put something up.
That was my theory that, you know, because maybe I'm a little bit like... Charlie, I'm trying to find the good in these people, you know, because I like Johnny Boy. I think Johnny Boy is a good guy. He just...
Well, it goes back to what I said of like, if you're raised in this, you're going to have warped values.
And I have warped.
Well, it depends on how deep you're in it, I guess.
But so we're going to learn a little bit more about Johnny Boy right now, where Johnny Boy is basically, he works for Tony. And he goes around collecting money, or is supposed to, and then he's supposed to bring back the money, he gets a cut, and that's it. That's the way it all works. And I'm guessing that Tony being his boss, he borrowed money from his boss, so he can't pay it. You know, it's a terrible slippery slope that he's on. So it's a little bit of a long clip, but I think it's well worth listening to throughout. I think that the dialogue here is so remarkable. This could be its own little play.
Yeah, it's basically the movie summed up in a clip.
Yeah, it really is. So here we go. And it's also, you're going to notice that I'm clearing my throat a lot. Excuse me. That the Robert De Niro character, and you're going to recognize his voice easily, he's just bullshitting. Like, he's just, yeah. And we all have met these kind of people where it's like, oh my God. But
you almost want to listen to his story. You want to listen to him see what he's going to say because it's so entertaining.
And that's what Charlie's doing. Charlie's basically just, all right, all right, all right. And he's willing to accept that he's being lied to because he's the nice guy. But here we go.
What do you mean, what am I doing? What are you doing to me, huh? What do you mean? Michael's been on my back all night. He's bothering me. Why didn't you make your payment last Tuesday?
What do you mean? I made my payment last Tuesday. What are you talking about?
You paid him last week?
Yeah, I paid him last week. Well, what did he say? He said I didn't pay him? He's a fucking liar. Where is he?
You paid him?
Yeah, I paid him.
Last week?
Yeah.
Last Tuesday?
Yeah. Charlie, you don't know what
he's here.
Where?
Out front.
He's here?
Yeah.
So what do I care?
All right, let me go get him. We'll straighten this thing out, all right?
Hey, wait a minute, Charlie.
What?
Well, you're right.
I'm right.
Yeah. Was it last Tuesday?
Yeah, that's the Tuesday. That was last week. That's before the one that's about to come up.
My mistake. I'm sorry. Forgive me. It was last week, the week before that I was thinking of. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it was, huh?
That's right.
What's the matter with you, Johnny? You can't go around bullshitting people that way. If you're worried about something, you got to keep it.
You don't know what happened to me. I'm so depressed about other things. I can't worry about payments. You know what I mean? I come home last Tuesday, I had my money to catch, you know? Blah, blah, bing, bing. I come at home, I ran into Jimmy Sparks. I owe Jimmy Sparks $700, like, for 4 months. I got to pay the guy. He lives in my building, hangs out across the street. I got to pay the guy, right?
Yeah.
So what happened? I had to give some to my mother, and then I wound up with 25 at the end of the week. And then what happened today, you ain't going to believe, because it's just incredible. I can't believe it myself.
What?
I was in a game. I had, like, $600-$700, right?
You got to be kidding.
Yeah, that's the street. You know Joey Clams?
Yeah.
Joey Scalzi, yeah.
I know him too, yeah.
Yeah, Joey Scala is Joey Clams.
Right. They're the same person.
Yeah.
Hey.
So I was in there playing bankers and brokers. All of a sudden, I'm ahead like $600-700. I'm really winning. All of a sudden, some kid walks in, and the kid yells that the bulls are coming, right? Yells the cops are coming. Everybody runs away. I grab all the money. I go in. It's an excuse, like, to get away.
Right.
You know, and I give everybody the money back later. And that way I get out. I don't have to get into the game and get a losing streak and all that. What happens? I come out of the yard. I don't know this building. Me, I don't know nothing. Couldn't get out. It was like a box, being like this. So I got to go back in. Not only do I go back in, but this kid says it's a false alarm. Imagine that. I want to kill this fucking kid. I mean, I was so crazy. I want to kill this kid. Meanwhile, I got to get back in the game. Bing, bing, bing. I lose $400. Meanwhile, Frankie Bones is over there. Frankie Bones. I own 1,300 for like 7-8 months already. He's after me. I can't even walk on Esther Street without ducking that guy. He's waiting for me. Like, I can't move, you know, and he sees that I'm losing, right? Yeah. So, like, he's waiting for me here. So he's tapping me on the shoulder. He's saying, hey, tapping me like this, like a hawk. Hey, get it up. You're losing now. Give me some money. I says, hey, Frankie, come on. You know, give me a break over here. Let me win some back. You know, I got debts. I mean, I'm in a big hole. He says, never mind. Give me the money. I says, okay, Frankie. So I gave him 200. Meanwhile, I lost the deal. I go outside. I'm a little depressed now. Anyway, I want to cut the story short because I know you don't want to hear all this. And I know. But I'm going to make a long story short. Anyway, I went to Al Kaplan. Got a new tie. Got the shirt. I like the shirt. It's a nice... It's time, boy.
Hey, Michael doesn't care if you're depressed. What is he, your priest? What do you come out going shopping when you owe somebody money, Johnny? That ain't right.
What are you talking about?
How much you got,
Charlie?
There?
I'm gonna pay him next week. I'm gonna pay
you.
Yeah,
you're going. You don't do nothing. How much you got there?
I got enough $40. What are you
doing? I got about $40. That's all.
What? What are you doing?
Now, I'm lying. I'm holding on to this until next week, till you make the next payment.
What are you talking about? What, it's a little more than 40? Yeah, it's a mistake.
Right.
Hey, listen, I swear to my mother, you come with me next Tuesday, I signed the paycheck over to you, Charlie. I swear to my mother, swear to Christ, okay? Come on, you come, it's $110, you give it to Mike. Come on, give me some money. We got those two beautiful girls out there. We're going to get laid, Mom. I met those chicks in that Cafe Bizarre, model. They were fucking around with these two other guys. I know we're going to get laid. That one wine trump is very nice. Very nice. I want to bang her like crazy.
Yeah.
Come on.
It's enough for you.
Come on. Give me another 5. Come on.
Which one do you want?
Come on. You're leaving me with none. We got to go eat chinks.
That's it. Now, you better make do for this for the week.
All right. Which one do you want? I want the wine trump one. She's nice. I like that one.
The one. She the one on the left?
Nah, she's the one. Nah. What, your left or my left?
We both stand the same way.
Well, I don't mind.
Hey, girls. A little business to talk over. Everything's okay now. Excuse me for a minute.
So he basically talks to Tony and gets his tab extended, and it's all good to go.
See, this is... I feel like that this is the sort of thing where... How many times has he already done this? How many times has he BS'd his way through it? I mean, I would think that at some point, or probably way before this, they would have figured out, don't give this guy money. Don't do anything. Don't help this guy. It's wrong.
It's wrong.
It's wrong.
I don't know if it's wrong, man. It's Johnny Boy.
It's Johnny Boy.
Come on.
He blows up mailboxes for us. Hey, come on. I like that when they're when like he goes hey, and then he just goes hey back. Hey.
He goes, yeah, they're the same people. Yeah, two. Oh.
I think they must have improvised that whole scene.
They must have. I definitely, Scorsese probably said to them, look, you guys have to just have a casual conversation, and you know, you have to just kind of go on, just, he probably just filmed and he just edited it all together. I love that scene.
Yeah, this is where we want story wise to be. These are the points that you need to make and then just go.
Right. So, you know, we learn about these characters. There's a lot of very rich and colorful characters. You pointed out when we were discussing, I think it's a great point that in the movie Goodfellas that comes out, what, another 17 years later, you're dealing with maybe an upper management level of people in Goodfellas. This is the real low level.
These are soup. These are like the bottom people. These
maybe
are like
minus Michael.
Yeah, like maybe. Like the, Well, I was thinking like Michael and then the boss guy that they kind of meet at the end.
The boss
they're
guy.
Almost, yeah, they meet. They're like the low. They're like the mid low level people that they were dealing with in Goodfellas.
Yeah.
Like the guys that were like the running the airport heist. And yeah. Like things like that. Like those are the guys. And so like the top guys in this are still kind of the low guys from Goodfellas. The guys that were always making mistakes and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, Goodfellas is to me anyway is such a wonderful classic.
Yes.
But of course, it takes it all a lot more lighthearted. Mm-hmm. It's like there's a comedic element.
Yeah, like Charlie would be say like on the level of like a spider. In Goodfellas. I mean, he gets shot, of course, but yeah. But I think it like that's where he would be. I think. Maybe it's like a slightly younger version of Charlie.
He'd be above Spider, but yeah, I know where you're coming from. He's definitely
he'd piss off Joe Pesci and he'd get shot.
You know, he's just, you know, he's a basic street thug.
Yeah.
But you know what? The fact that he wears a suit, I think it helps.
So, he's working towards something.
So they're going around because basically Johnny Boy is not going around collecting money. He's, you just heard what he said. He's not paying the money. He's not collecting money. It's all
picking
pretty
up
ridiculous.
Women and goofing around, probably taking drugs.
Probably taking drugs. I don't think so. Not Johnny Boy.
Smoking the Mary Jane and whatnot.
Smoking those funny cigarettes.
Yeah.
That they sell in the jazz clubs.
Yeah, that reefer.
So what we do is we get to this pool hall where basically the guy owes them protection money or some type of amount of money where they do something for him. You know, we're not really sure. It's never clear what they do for these people. But the people seem to pay it without much of an issue, really. Like, the pool hall guy has no issue paying the price, right? Do you get that?
No.
He doesn't seem to mind it. It's them he doesn't like.
Yeah.
And here's that scene, actually. I also do want to point out that this soundtrack is out of control amazing. Like all of Scorsese's movies. Not all, but many of these
movies. When I looked it up, it was like it didn't actually come out on any sort of video format until 1985. Wow. And I'm wondering if – I don't think it was because people didn't want to see it. It might have had something to do with, you know, the music rights and getting paid and things like that. These things just sometimes take time, maybe.
Yeah, that's why Arliss, even though I would have no interest in seeing Arliss from HBO – Arliss has so many celebrities on it that they can't get the rights to release these videos.
Interesting.
And you cannot even find them in the bootleg world, which is very strange to me. I challenge you to find it. But, you know, you have Jumpin' Jack Flash here. Keep in mind, this is 1973. This isn't like 1987 Whoopi Goldberg. You know, this is...
No.
You know, this is really, really a magical time for rock and roll. A really remarkable Italian.
And Jumpin' Jack Flash is probably one of the newer songs on the soundtrack. Like, sure. A lot of them are like 60s, 50s, 60s.
Yeah, he has music from the Chantels. He also has Tell Me from the Stones. But he has a ton of really amazing... I get like peasant Italian music, which is really incredible. They show something that you don't see too often. That's Little Italy before it was really taken over by Chinatown more. What else does he have on here? He has an Eric Clapton song called I Looked Away. A lot of bands that people have just, you know, they're really kind of one hit wonders, like the Aquatones or. This Jimmy Roselli, you know, I met him on a Sunday, which is the Do Ron Ron song and Ronnie's and the Ronettes. I mean, you have like Phil Spector stuff. It's an incredible soundtrack.
Yeah. It almost creates a juxtaposition of all this music, all this life. And then they're living this sort of gritty, depressing existence.
See, like I don't think that they're living in the moment, though. I mean, from a third part perspective, where you're viewing their life,
Yeah.
Sure, you can think it's depressing, but I don't think that these are depressed people. These are people that are living...
Well, they're in survival mode.
There's so much drama going on in their lives.
They're in survival mode. They're just trying to make whatever their situation that they were in, they're trying to make it work. And yeah, you're right. It's like, it's bleak to us, but it's like, to them, their normal way of being is all this adversity and bad things and bad decisions. And it's just, that's what's normal to them. So they don't even think of it as being depressed. So they're not like, they're not necessarily like wallowing. Like, they're not like, oh, woe is me. At least not most of them. But they're like, I'm going to go out and I'm going to do bad things because that's what I do.
Right. So they go to the pool hall to collect some cash. I'll play that. Which I think is a pretty entertaining scene. To say the least. Chop on my. As Johnny walks towards past these two girls at the jukebox, he grabs her ass. You know, hey, can't get done now.
Go ahead. I got scotch. I got a jar of coke. Hey, where'd you get the hat? You like this hat?
That must be a $25 Dobbs hat.
Where'd you get those sneakers? These are $2 sneakers.
Why don't you lower the jukebox? I can't even look.
Hey, the girls like the music loud.
Girls, you called those skanks girls.
Hey, what's the matter with this kid, huh?
Hey, there ain't nothing wrong with me, my friend. I'm feeling fine. Keep your mouth shut. Hey, you tell me that in front of this asshole.
All right, all right. We're not gonna pay. We're not paying.
No, but why? We just said we were gonna have a drink.
We're not paying because this guy's a fucking mook.
But I didn't say nothing.
And we don't pay mooks.
A mook? I'm a mook?
Yeah.
What's a mook?
A mook? What's a mook?
I don't know.
What's a mook?
You can't call me a mook.
I can't?
No.
I give you mook. Hey, it's a mook.
And it's just, you know, having some fun punching each other out.
I don't know if it's fun, but yeah.
Mook is, of course, a derogatory term for...
It's an insult that you don't...
African-American.
That you don't hear... lot lately.
No, this is an old term.
And right before he hurled that insult, I did look at the guy and I like made the mental note of like the guy looks vaguely Barack Obama-ish to me. Like something in the face looked that way to me. So when he hit him with the insult, I was like, yeah, I guess I was I wouldn't insult him, of course, but it was like I can see why he might think. Although the guy, I'm pretty sure he was just a kind of a darker Italian with kind of a.
Well, there are a lot of Italians who have very dark skin, very kinky hair. If you remember in the movie, the Spike Lee joint, what the hell is it called?
Do the Right Thing. Yeah.
Where there's a reference where Spike Lee says to the John Turturro.
John Turturro, yeah.
And he was just saying, your hair's kinkier than mine. So, you know, I'm pretty sure Mook comes from Mookie Wilson, who had a really tough time in the major leagues throughout the 50s.
So it's almost like a modern insult of the time that has already passed.
Yeah, like you wouldn't. It's weird. I for whatever reason, I recall it knowing about this. But, you know, I'm not one for really racial epithets. So, you know, I would rather just call somebody ugly. or you're dumb.
So you'd be getting that part and going, you know what? I'm not going to give you your money because you're dumb.
You know what it is? I will judge people on so much more than something as simple as their race.
There's so many more reasons to hate people than their race.
if I'm just going to sit around and judge somebody because of their weight or their hair color or lack of hair or... you know, if they're short, it's too easy.
Yeah. You want to be inventive with your insults.
Yeah, that's what I try not to curse. I try to use words that aren't cursing. But in a movie like this, where it uses the word fuck in one way or another over 50 times, it really put the word on the map.
Mm-hmm.
So, what were you guys saying?
It has nothing. I mean, the amount of F words used in this is nothing compared to something like a Scarface. Or even like Eddie Murphy, you know, an Eddie Murphy concert.
In 15 minutes of like delirious.
Yeah.
So the police come in, one black guy, one white guy.
Yeah. And he's super nice to the, like, after, like, now he's, like, super nice to the black cop.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't want any trouble.
And I also want to mention, when they're hitting each other with pool cues and everything, they're really hitting each other. I mean, these are obviously not real pool cues because, you know, those are pretty hardcore. But they're hitting each other pretty hard. So I definitely think people went home with a bruise that night. So
I'm almost sure of that.
Yeah, people are getting really rowdy. So they're getting frisked. I'm going to play this scene where the pool owner, the billiard owner, basically buys their way out.
What you got here?
That's a nail file.
That's a knife.
No.
This is a knife.
No, it's got a toothpick in there. And,
Davis, this is very embarrassing. Look, how long have I known you, Davis, huh? You've never seen fights like this. These are my friends. It's my cousin Charlie. We're friends.
Right. Your cousin?
Yeah.
Where are you from?
East side.
The east side. What is this? This is a knife.
No, it's a knife. It's
got a toothpick in there. See over
Davis,
there?
Come here. Yeah,
your cousin from the east side
or west side? Davis, let me just talk to you over here.
What are you going to say about this knife?
It's a little harmless penknife.
This is a dangerous weapon. Do you know the penalty for this?
Look, I'm sure we can settle this.
How are we going to settle this? You've got all this.
Let me give you some coffee.
All right.
Took you a long time. Where are you going?
New Jersey.
Jersey. All right, here. This is for you and your partner.
Going to Philadelphia.
Hey.
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Davis.
Johnny, come on.
Thanks a lot, Davis.
You guys here. Listen, no more of this fooling around, huh? You guys get hurt like that. All right?
Okay.
So, you know, it's all good in the hood. You know, it's all just fine.
As I'm, like, re-listening to this, I realized he sounded a lot like Kramer's lawyer on Seinfeld. Who told you to put the bomb on? Who told you to put the bomb on?
Do you know what this is? This is a dangerous weapon. Yeah. So, the owner said, you know, basically after the dust settles a little bit, this is what happened.
Come on, Jimmy, we were going to pay you. We just don't like being pushed around.
Yeah. Hey, come on, Joe. We're pushing you around.
Yeah.
Well, let's have a drink and forget about it.
All right. This is the drink we never had before. Come on, salute.
Salute.
All right, here's your money. Hey, you don't have to count it. It's all there.
No, you go ahead. Count it.
Hey, come on. No bullshit. Friends.
Come on. Hey, don't fucking touch me, scumbag.
Hey, shut up.
And they're fighting again. It's 30 seconds and they're fighting again. I love it. So, we're going to actually fast forward through some of these scenes here. So, Charlie has a girlfriend who happens to be the sister of Johnny Boy. He is keeping his affair a bit of a secret. She seems like a sweet girl, misguided, but sweet girl. She has epilepsy, and for whatever reason, everybody knows about it. Probably because she had public seizures. And it's just like this big, ridiculous thing. So Charlie is not exactly the best boyfriend in the world. But I think for these, when you're going to compare to all of these guys, he probably isn't as bad, but yeah,
he certainly has thoughts of other women, but it doesn't seem like he ever actually cheats on her,
but he tries to kind of. Because
he tries to sometimes, but he doesn't. He has this weird sort of loyalty towards her. So it's like he's almost a good person, which for them is like a really good person. But he is somewhat sort of emotionally abusive towards her, though. Right. And it's because like she'll start to talk to him and get a lovey dovey, and then he'll call her the C word, and you know, it's like it's a little. It makes me go hey.
Exactly. So, basically talks to her. They talk about whatever they're doing and they fight, they argue, and, you know, and probably happens every day. It's a slice of life. Yeah. So we're back at the bar. We're back at Tony's bar, Volpe's, and a very drunk David Carradine is in the background. Do you want to tell this story? This part?
Well, yeah, he goes to the bathroom. He walks into the bathroom, and I realized this earlier today that he was probably the biggest star in this movie at that time, wasn't he? Because he was coming right off of Kung Fu. He was probably the most well known person in this movie.
Yeah, I'm thinking
it was probably like a celebrity cameo almost.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
And he goes in, and some guy that has a grudge with him shoots him. But in the back, but he doesn't die, and he starts coming after him, and then this fight breaks out, and he grabs him, and they come out of the bathroom, and it keeps going into the bar.
But he's shooting him, and it's like Carradine's character, who's just listed as the drunk, is chasing after this guy, and it's clear that this is a hit. The guy who's shooting is a very young guy. He's very long hair, which is strange because we see him from the back and he pulls out his hair. And I'm like, is this like a transvestite or something? I remember the first time I saw this, I didn't really know what was going on.
Maybe he was trying to wear some sort of costume so he wouldn't get noticed or something?
I don't know. Because he really has long hair.
Hmm. Well, it was the 70s, so.
Yeah. So basically he shoots and they all disperse. They're all like, let's get the hell out of here. And they go into, was it Tony's car? No, Michael's car. Right? Was it Michael's? Hold on, I'll tell you in a sec.
Somebody's car.
No, it's Michael's car.
Okay.
And they're stuck with these two guys who just happen to be hanging out. And they're like, yeah, give us a ride. So here's a moment I'll just play it of them all in the car after somebody was shot. You know, another thing that's weird is there are a lot of people on the street. And it's probably like 2 or 3 in the morning. Manhattan, I mean, all right, it's the town that never sleeps, but it's never this busy at 2 or 3 in the morning.
Well, this is New York in the 70s. It was a little different then.
No, not this part of town. Part of town would not have been like that.
Well, maybe it's like all the bad people are out at this time of night.
I think it's just that it's probably more like that it's 8 o'clock and those people just happen to be on the street.
Could be.
And they're like, just roll the film. Because it's raining.
Hey, shut up! You're making too much noise.
Just get me in. I'm standing out here in the rain.
What's the matter with you guys?
Hey, stay there. Come on, get away. Get away. Move over. Stay over there. Stay on your sides.
Don't touch me.
Place, where are we?
Jesus.
It is a very, very flamboyant.
Where are we?
Sammy, get control. Will you behave yourself?
All right.
I'm terribly sorry, guys. It's just that he's terribly frightened.
Just keep him quiet, all right?
What are these, friends of yours, Mike?
What are you, a comedian? I can't get over the way he just kept going at him.
Yeah, it must have been all that liquor in him, boy. Model.
Hey, Chalutz. Statazid.
Yeah, Statazid. You know what Statazid means, Sammy?
Sounds like something dirty.
What are you looking at? Hey, what are we doing with these faggots? Trot them out.
What are you, nuts? What do you want me to do? Leave them in front of Tony's place? Come on.
Hey, Ben.
So the busiest are yelling at the people on the street, like, hey, beautiful. I love that guy. And people just, like, you know, give them the finger, and, you know, it's a very turbulent time.
I don't think we ever made a clip of it, but there's a part kind of, like, a little before this where the guys, and I think they're probably, it's their car, where they pick up a couple of, like, young kids trying to buy drugs.
I think that's a little bit later.
A little bit later?
Well, yeah.
And then
just remember they go to the movies.
Yeah. Oh, okay. All right. And then, so, like, but they try to get these kids to buy drugs, and then they basically say we need to go over here to get the drugs, and then give us the money first, and then they just drop them off and they say we'll come back, and then they just drive away.
Yeah, I've fallen for this scam before.
Oh jeez.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
No, it's all right. It's no big deal. It's one of those risks that you take when you're buying like something, and the rule is you never ever give somebody money that you're not willing to just lose. You'll always find it somewhere else. But so they go back to Charlie's apartment or Johnny Boy's. Yeah, it's Charlie's apartment. And they're like sleeping in the same bed, like they're, you know, 12-year-old kid or maybe 10-year-old, you know, best friends. And
yeah. And I think we had discussed this previously. It's almost like this weird sort of
bromance, like you were saying.
Yeah, they're bromance, and they're also like emotionally underdeveloped. Like they still feel like they're kids. I mean, they still live with their parents. They still live at home. I mean, yeah. I know that Charlie does, because it like there's this part where he's getting ready to go out, and I kind of looked at him like, does he still live at home? It looks like he has like his room, and he just sort of walks out. Do you ever see his mom? At some point,
no. All I recall is the note saying, "Try this on."
Yeah, that's what it says. It's like, yeah. Try this on. It looks good.
So Charlie goes to a hotel with his girlfriend, and Johnny Boy knows that it's going on, but nobody really talks about it much. I think it's an uncomfortable subject. They do live next door to each other. I don't know if we mentioned that. So when Charlie wants to talk to what's her name? Sorry, I forgot. Teresa. He just yells out the window. You know, it's like they were probably like, you know, 11, 12 years old and in love their whole lives. And now it's 20 years later and nothing's changed. Like, you know, it's a bit sad. So they go to a hotel because they have to hide their romance. We get to see kind of Teresa's not exactly the nicest person in the world. She sees the cleaning woman outside the hotel, and she just basically, in a very bitchy way, says, "Would you clean it up already?" or something along those lines. I'm like, oh, you know, that's kind of like one of those things where it's, you know, like first date, and it's like, you know, the person starts talking about like racist things, you know, and it's like, whoa, what are you talking about?
Hey.
Yeah. So the Harvey Keitel character is very conflicted. He has a bit of a much more of a connection than Johnny does, because I think he's being focused on by the higher ups as a little bit more serious, and they're looking at him to take on a real role, a real job, and he's maybe about to be groomed to take over a restaurant that somebody had to give up because of loan sharks. So the problem is that it's his uncle. I think it's his uncle. Will is a more of a big time. He's like a Henry Hill.
Henry.
And he tells Charlie, "I want you to stay away from Johnny Boy and his whole family. You know, just stop messing with them and, you know, stay out of trouble," type of thing. Yeah. And he's very conflicted because he's in love with Teresa. He won't even say "I love you," but he does. So they go to the beach. He's complaining that he hates the beach. He hates the heat. Typical Goomba. And he's just basically not tagging her along, like basically, like you were saying, like just dangling a carrot.
Yeah.
And giving her false hope.
I don't think that even he knows.
No.
He doesn't know how to act.
But he does know that this is probably his first opportunity to really do something with his life.
Yeah.
Which is why he's willing to sacrifice everything. So what does he do? He goes to a club and he tries to seduce a dancer.
Yeah, a black dancer.
A black dancer in the early 70s. And
he's already conflicted about it. He's already like kind of like had conversations with Jesus or God or whatever and said, like, what is this? Why am I doing this? Why?
Right. And we also learn that his character was supposed to be a priest. Or not a priest, but he was supposed to be somebody who wanted to become a priest, but I guess bailed out of the entire idea. So I'm going to play a little bit of him with the dancer. And that, right after that, it pretty much escalates very quickly.
Hey, Diane, how are you feeling?
Fine. Excuse me, please.
You know, Diane, I've been wanting to talk to you for a while now. Excuse me. Aside from all that joking around that you and I do outside here, you know, when you're on,
Excuse me.
I really think, you're a terrific performer.
Fine.
Hey, no, I'm serious. You know, you're really very good.
I know.
It's groovy. You know, in a little while, I'm gonna have the opportunity of opening my own place. Much nicer than this. Uptown. Sort of a nightclub restaurant and everything. And, I was thinking you'd do very nicely for the place.
Dancing?
No, as the hostess. That's nice.
Hostess?
Yeah, you know, the people come in and you greet them and you show them to the tables and everything like that. Listen, why don't we get together later on and we'll talk about it a little bit.
Chinese food?
Hey, Chinese food.
It's weird at any woman's heart. So, you know, he's setting up a date with this woman. He even takes a cab to go meet her and then basically changes his mind last minute.
Now, I can't decide. Is he chickening out because he doesn't want to cheat on Teresa, or is he chickening out because she's black? Or both?
It's because she's black, I think.
Okay.
This would not have gone over very well. Not in his community, not in her community. You know, it's just not, it wasn't done. It, you know, of course it was, but this isn't something that you would have done. That's all. No. So what do? Charlie basically goes and meets his uncle, and that's where the uncle breaks the news. Hey, this could all be yours. This restaurant is yours. You want it.
It's yours for various reasons that were kind of explained earlier in the movie about how this guy couldn't pay his debts. So he just gave the restaurant to him because he's like, I can't pay you because my partner. And then they tell this whole story about his partner just like killed himself like randomly for no reason. Yeah. They never really explain that why. But yeah, because of all this.
Well, probably because, you know, I mean, with any type of loan shark, sometimes it's not enough to just take the business.
Mm-hmm. So now he has it. So now the boss has it, and he says, "Here, take it."
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. So it's a beautiful restaurant. It's crazy. So what does he do? He has to go and talk to his girlfriend that nobody in the building knows that he's dating. So he whispers out the window, and they talk very quietly. I'm gonna play you that scene of them basically whispering the whole time. Listen very closely. All right. It's very hard to hear them.
What is it? Don. Come on. Can't make it tonight.
Okay. All right, so is that also I'll see you on Friday?
Friday, can't make it Friday either.
What do you mean?
I can't see you for a while.
Don't tell me that.
Teresa.
Why?
Because you are fucking things up between you and Johnny. You're gonna ruin everything for me.
Ruin what?
Ruin what?
You shut the question, dog. I saw you. Oi.
I'm sorry, Mrs. Yuropolo. Pardon me. Come on, sir.
Why am I ruining everything?
Chiquanga, you're slapping him out, Teresa. Shut up. Listen to me for a minute. My uncle's got me lined up to run a restaurant that I want, but I gotta stay away from you and Johnny.
Does he know about you and me?
No.
Does he know about Johnny and those loans?
No, what are you kidding me? Of course not.
So, you know, they have very turbulent, quiet, private talk there. Jeez. So of course she doesn't understand it because it's crazy.
I almost expect that priest in Rocky to like do the special blessing like from the window.
Hey, yo, father, throw me down a blessing. Yo, father. So we start seeing Michael pop up a lot more, and Michael is saying, you know, I'm at my wit's end. Johnny Boy's got to pay me. He owes me, you know, three big ones, you know, $3,000. So he's like, I'm going to be at the Hero's Welcome tonight. You know, there's one of their friends is coming back from Vietnam, and they're going to, you know, present him with a beautiful flag. Be there tonight. Make sure he's there. So they go, they're drinking everything, and this is a scene where I had mentioned before that they had mounted a camera on Keitel's chest with an anchor keeping the weight. So you get this kind of drunkenness, woozy feeling where the face remains stationary, but the entire background is moving. And you're getting this, you know, you have to watch it. And it's a very common thing to do nowadays. But for back then, it was extremely innovative.
It wouldn't be considered like Steadicam. That's a completely different. It's almost like the opposite of Steadicam.
It actually is a Steadicam, except it's filming the face of the
camera. Yeah, instead of it going forward, it's almost going backwards. It's going like...
But you're technically, you're right. But it's a Steadicam in reverse.
Yeah.
Because you're filming the face of the person. It's the same effect that you get with these people who film themselves on bicycles and stuff like that, on ramps and off-road.
Like a GoPro kind of thing.
Exactly. Almost. And that's what this effect is. And it's really wonderful to see that 44 years ago they achieved something like this.
Yeah, but with like, I'm like thinking like, what kind of film camera did they, because film cameras are big and clunky. Yeah, I wonder how they even pulled that off.
This is all 35 millimeter. I mean, we're talking, he probably had a good 90 pounds worth of,
maybe there was some person sort of like holding the weight while he moved.
It's interesting because when you watch it, it's like, you know, he's pulling it off. It looks great. That's Scorsese, you know. I would love to see a few shots of them filming this scene, but I don't know if they exist. So the reason why we're seeing Keitel like that is because he is wasted out of his mind. Michael wakes him up and he's like, you know, this is it. I'm old. You know, I'm sick of this. I'm not going to take it anymore. So Keitel, well, Charlie says, look, I'm going to take care of it. He's a nice guy. So he goes and he tries to track down Johnny Boy. He actually finds Johnny Boy. And they have a heart-to-heart in the cemetery, and this is where you get to see parts of New York. Beautiful urban decay. New York in a way that you know, if you see it now, it's so sterile in comparison, some of these locations. But at the same time, it's been beautified in that sense, too. It's nice to see it gritty, but it's always better, in my opinion, to see it being maintained and nice. So they go through a lot of different things. Michael has a visit to Teresa where I thought that he was going to like basically threaten her, but he basically just says, make sure Johnny Boy shows up tonight. Because they renegotiate, the $3,000 down to what? 1800 was it? Do you remember?
Yeah.
So he actually was able, no, two grand. He took off $1,000 off of the top of what Johnny Boy owes him, which is crazy. Johnny Boy shows up. Well, he doesn't show up, but then he shows up late. They got to find Michael. It's crazy. It's ridiculous. And who has an epileptic seizure right in the middle? Teresa.
Yeah.
Martin Scorsese's mother comes out in her cameo role and helps out. And she's always a wonderful sight for sore eyes to all of us Scorsese fans. A little fun fact is that she used to cook for the entire crew, and you could just imagine how amazing the food probably was. You know, if you're a fan of Goodfellas, she was also the woman who, was the mother of Pesci?
Yeah. Pesci, like, isn't it right after, like, they have some sort of, like, burial where they bonk a guy in the head and then they bury him and then they go, they're all, like, covered in, like, mud and everything, and then they go to...
They're like, we hit a deer.
Yeah, and they go to Pesci's house, and then the mom, I'm going to cook for you.
It's like, just have a little bit. How come you don't eat?
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's an Italian household. What do we get to? We get to Johnny getting a little bit more fearful. He's starting to step into survival mode, which is something that I don't think that we see too often in this movie. He turns to Charlie to help him, but he only has 30 bucks and that's just not going to work. So they try a little bit of a different tactic. So, here we go.
Yeah, you know how they are.
And hopefully I'm not skipping over too much stuff here. I think anybody who wants to see this movie should sit down and watch it. I mean, it's a phenomenal movie. With so many different things going on, like the tiger.
I would describe it as it's an experience. It's an experience. You almost just want to sort of like turn off your phone and just sort of it's almost like you're living with these people.
Yes, absolutely. It's a slice of life with them.
Yes.
I love you.
Oh, whoops.
Ever since that first day at the convent when I saw you playing volleyball with the nuns.
Messed up that clip. I have to. They're basically at the bar, and Michael shows up, and Johnny Boy basically gives him a piece of his mind, which isn't much.
Go ahead.
All right.
You bastard!
All right. Hey, John. Hey, Joyce.
Yeah. Hey, we'll meet at bingo some night.
Hey, what's the story, John? I was here earlier tonight. You kept me waiting for an hour.
Hey, I'm sorry, Mikey, but, you know, I had something to do. But I got something for you. Not much, but I got something for you.
He has about $30. It's always got on him, Michael.
Where's the rest?
Yeah, where's the rest?
Well, I bought a few rounds of drinks over here while I was waiting, you know what I mean? Tony says my credit ain't no good no more.
You know, $30 is enough of an insult. But I take it for Charlie. $10. John. Hey, Mike, you're really something, you know that? What's the matter? You're too good for this $10, huh? You're too good for it. It's a good $10. You know something, Mikey? You make me laugh, you know that? You know, I borrowed money all over this neighborhood, left and right, from everybody, and I never paid them back. So I can't borrow no money from nobody no more, right? So who does that leave me to borrow money from but you? I borrow money from you because you're the only jerk off around here that I can borrow money from without paying back, right? Right? Because, you know, that's what you are. That's what I think of you, a jerk off. You're smiling like because you're a jerk off. You're a fucking jerk off. And I tell you something else, Mikey. I fuck you right where you breathe, because I don't give two shits about you or nobody else.
And those are things you just don't say to a loan shark.
You don't really say them to anybody, really.
It depends. But you don't say it to somebody who could do bad things to you.
Mm-hmm.
So they take Tony's car, which is an awesome car. I don't know what kind it is. And they go to Brooklyn. And they go to a movie. And what movie was it again? It was a Vincent Price horror.
House of Wax.
And the movie, I mean, the movie literally has 7 minutes at this point left. It's crazy how much stuff happens in this short amount of time. they're driving through Brooklyn. They're laughing. They're hootering and hollering. They're saying slow down. And they seem like they're, you know, they don't care again. And out of nowhere, a car pulls up next to them. And it's, not Tony. But, who's the one? Michael.
Michael. It's Michael and special guest star
Martin Scorsese in the back seat.
Yeah.
A very young looking Martin Scorsese. And he fires like 4 or 5 rounds into the car, making them lose control and smash into a fire hydrant. I'm going to play that scene.
And De Niro gets shot like in the neck and he's sort of like sticking out of the car.
Oh, it's crazy. His neck.
Yeah.
And I'm going to play it only because it's such a crazy sounding scene. If it gets too noisy, I might just kill it. But,
it's the sound and the way it's edited is what makes
you gotta see this movie. Important. Yeah. It's a movie to see. There's no doubt about it.
Where you going?
You're crazy. You're out of your mind. That was a light there. You see that light?
The light was red, right?
What?
Oh.
Slow down.
What does red mean?
Slow down. Will you slow down?
Teresa, I wish you'd slow down your mouth a little. How about that? What is that guy, crazy?
Hey, Chuck.
Now's the time.
To break the music, they show them smash into a fire hydrant. The water's going everywhere. Immediately you hear an ambulance coming, police are coming. And, you know, we had different theories as to who lived and who might have died.
Well, they showed Keitel is just
Go, you finish it off.
Well, Keitel is there, and he's just, I think he's just sort of sitting there, like shaken.
Yeah.
And then they pull his girlfriend out, and I thought that she maybe had died, but she hadn't. She was just like really beaten up though by the crash, because it looked
thankfully
like she almost
they
like,
had airbags.
And we had debated it, is Johnny Boy alive, is he not? You said he would be. I said I don't know, he got shot in the neck, I don't know,
he's not gonna die. It's too, that would be too easy. Johnny Boy is the guy with the scar. You know, and he goes, and there should be a part two where he borrows more money from Michael.
Oh, no. See, now that's the thing of like, okay, maybe he lives. Michael finds him.
Yeah.
I think.
Well, this is the thing, is he wouldn't owe Michael the money anymore.
Why?
He shot him. Come on. I'm not going
to. Like that, that evens it out?
It
like
does. That. It evens it out.
You know how those rules work or something? Or?
Oh, yeah. You might pay something, but you no longer owe as much because you took it out. You took blood. You know, it's like you settled the score.
Like almost like an old style duel. Like
yeah,
you shoot.
In a lot of ways. You shamed them. But, all in all, this is a fantastic movie. I would say this is Scorsese's first real movie. You know, he did a number of short films. Actually, no, Scorsese also made... what was that movie called?
He made one Roger Corman movie, I think. And that's kind of like when I was looking this up on Wikipedia, so he did that, and then his friend said to him, look, you need to do something that's just you.
And yeah, so he chose stories that he had experienced or heard in his life.
Didn't he kind of basically co-write this?
Scorsese?
Yeah.
I think he totally wrote this.
He wrote
the screenplay.
Okay.
You know, this is all like his own personal account of what had happened, you know, when he was a kid, I guess, or what he had heard. But, all in all, go and see Mean Streets. Mean Streets is just phenomenal. I think I'm going to place an order tonight for the Blu-ray, which...
maybe it has extra features, you know?
$8.17. How can you go wrong for $8, right?
It costs twice that just to see a movie in the theaters.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I'm looking here to see if there's any extras. I don't like Amazon sometimes. They don't tell you what is on the disc.
I'm looking for you. I'm looking on the web, Blu-ray.com.
Oh, there's a commentary by Scorsese.
Oh, wow.
Amy Robinson.
They give the picture quality 4 out of 5.
Oh, really?
They give the sound 4 out of 5.
And there's a vintage featurette called Back on the Block, which maybe he used to like finance this at some time.
I'm wondering if the audio commentary is like, was there ever like, we're talking about Criterion discs. I wonder, was there ever, like a Criterion Laserdisc in this? And maybe that had like tons of special features that you could like order. Let me see, Criterion Mean Streets. I feel like if they did anything, this would be one of those movies.
Yeah, I see it here. Oh yeah, it's a great cover too. That looks like a laser. I mean, that looks like a videotape box. Just not sure. Video Mean Street. Did you write Laserdisc?
Okay. Mean Street's Laserdisc. Let's see.
Yeah. That's Raging Bull.
That might have been one that slipped through the cracks. Let's see. Criterion Mean Street's Laserdisc. Well, I see.
Somebody's on eBay selling a lot of 5, which includes Raging Bull, Taxi Driver, Mean Street, Last Temptation of Christ.
Yeah, there was a Laserdisc, but it looks like it's just a regular Warner Brothers with nothing extra. It's just the movie.
Yeah. That's a shame. It's a great movie, and I think I'm definitely going to buy the Blu-ray and see what that looks like. And I'll go from there. I'm really interested to hear the Scorsese commentary. I'm a big fan of Scorsese's opinions on American cinema, including his own. But all right, David, thank you very much for getting together for this podcast. I know we went a little bit over, but
but for a movie like this, I think it's important that we really got into it, I think.
Sure. All right, man. So yeah, well, I'll catch you next time on VHS Rewind.
Bye-bye.